Sure, a lot of you all have heard Claude in meetings. Claude has 16 years of sobriety and just one of the staples of the How Place as far as I'm concerned. Every time he shares, I just get a lot about it, out of it, because it's simply the truth. And he lives this program. It's not a hobby for him. It is a way of life. And so I think we're really, really blessed to have Claude come up here and share. So I'm going to turn it over to Claude W.
My name is Claude Waldrop, and I am a grateful recovered alcoholic. Cost me $35 to have Speedy's leg broke, so laughter makes for usefulness, our book says. So I always try to throw in some laughter in here because that's what we need the most. We come from some pretty diverse ways of life and some pretty damn god-awful background sometimes, and some of us have it pretty easy in life, but the one thing for sure is this program works miracles. The power greater than ourselves is what guides us all. I'm to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. For this alcoholic, I was born in Atlanta in 1953, and in Atlanta, I grew up all around here. My family comes from the Blue Ridge Mountains, where we brewed moonshine for generations. And then my grandfather on my dad's side that was brewing the moonshine became a Baptist preacher. And so I've had moonshine, preaching, and snakes rattled over my head. You'll believe in any damn thing they tell you after that. I mean, I'm the last one, the sixth child in our family. We had three older sisters and two older brothers. And so every time something got broke, tore up, or screwed up, Claude did it. Yeah, and most of the time I did do it. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun growing up in Georgia in the beginning, because all this stuff that's here now wasn't here, and you could go anywhere around here and see wildlife, and it was not unusual to have to throw some rocks at a bear or two just to get them away from the trash cans around, right around here. My dad was an alcoholic. Mom never was. She was just a good old Southern girl, just a good old gal, still is. She's alive, doing well. But Dad drank. And it runs in our family rampantly. It was just a way of life. I grew up watching people get into fist fights, get cut, get shot, go to the hospital, go to jail, pass out in the yard, wreck automobiles, and die. I mean, they just died from alcoholism, you know, the liver, the kidney, the heart. Some of them were just plain insane and got locked away in nut wards. That was the way I grew up. It was just an alcoholic lifestyle. It was the only normal thing I knew. I can remember the first drink that I took that had an effect on me that changed my thinking about life. I was 4 years old, and Dad's remedy for anything from a snake bite to a severed artery was a double shot of moonshine with a little piece of candy in it to kind of cut it a little bit. And I had had some ailment or another, and I was extremely sick in bed, and I'm sweating like hell, and I've hurt all over, and it was just awful, coughing. He comes in there, and he hands me this glass of this stuff that looks like water. And he said, "You drink that. You just toss it down. You've seen me do it." And I'm, "Hell yeah, you know." He said, "You just toss that down, and you stay under them covers." And I tossed that stuff down, and it looked like water, tasted like shit, and burnt like fire. Moonshine, if you've ever had any, tastes terrible. Once you get that first one down, when it hit bottom, it just exploded, and I got the warm fuzzies all over, man. And I'm 4 years old, sweating under them covers, going, "Man, I'm fine. Everything's okay. I can get out of bed and go play now." That's when it had the effect, that first effect that alcohol had. And I chased that illusion of that warm, fuzzy feeling for them until I was 38 years old. And I always drank for effect, because that's the way I saw the men and the women in my family drink, for the effect. They drank to get rid of this problem or that problem, or because things were good or things were bad or things were just different. They just drank. Most of the men just fought and got crazy and arrested, and most of the women just went to the hospital to take a little rest. Poor dear's got bad nerves, you know. God love her, you know. That was the rich ones on the other side of the family, you know. The rest of us, we just sweated it out in the yard somewhere or something, yeah. But I have dyslexia. So when I read things, it's a lot more fun for me to try to figure things out because there's a 24-hour-a-day Scrabble game going on up here. If we're driving down the road in the same vehicle and I read a sign over to the side that says on-ramp to the highway, you know, you're reading the same thing that says on-ramp to the highway, my brain every time tells me it says no ramp. And I'm going, wait a minute. Now there's a ramp there because I can see it, so that wasn't right. And I have to re-scramble that in my head. And this happens all the time to me. So when I came in here and found out that alcoholics have a thinking problem, I'm going, oh good, there's other people like me. So coming up in school was not an easy task because the numbers moved around on me. The letters were backwards and the teachers were just hell because they didn't understand anything about that. Nobody knew anything about it really. They just, you were deemed as being slow and stupid or retarded. And that's the way everybody treated me. And everybody in the family said, you know, that's Claude, he's the stupid one, you know. But when I was 2 years old in family reunions, we used to have family reunions around here, and the Waldrops did. And I was a strange kid even then, before I ever had that drink at age four, because in family reunions, they go, you see that little one there, that little blonde here? That one's Claude, watch out for him, he bites. And I have no idea why I did that, because, you know, if I didn't know whether I bit you because I liked you or I didn't like you. I just bit. I don't know. It was, my head's been that way since birth, so I was born like this. So I was, that's my excuse. I mean, I was born into an alcoholic family. I was just this way up from the get-go. And in school, I was always the class clown trying to distract from my inability to be able to cope. And I learned that, see, my uncle had one of the only bars between Marietta and Atlanta, you know, so I could go over to his bar, you know, the little bar and grill thing there on Canton Highway. It used to be Jack's place, and I'd fill up, put ice in the coolers, and fill up the liquor, you know, and cut the stuff with water like he said to do, and stick it back up there and everything. You know. He would let me take beer and liquor and stick it out the back door for payment. You know, so I was always, after school, I was over at my uncle's place, you know, doing the stuff and sticking stuff out the back door. So I found out right quick that, you know, in the 6th, 7th, 8th grade, nobody else had ability to get a hold of liquor. But you go see Claude, because he had a connection. You know, and that's what I did. I learned how to trade and barter with people. You know, and you had this and that. And see, I've done everything that... all mood and mind-altering chemicals. I'm one of those folks that was very curious. Better living through chemistry, they called it for a while there, you know. But, yeah. So I traded a lot. I learned how to talk to people and be their friend and how to act like other people because, see, I never fit in. Ever since I was 2 years old, I never fit in, and I knew that. I knew my brain worked different from other people's, and I had to learn how it was that you acted, how you dressed, and what you said, so that I could act that way, dress that way, and talk that way to fit in, because I knew that there was something wrong with me. I was different, but I didn't know how and didn't know why. So I always tried to fit in, and I learned how to be that chameleon, like so many of us do. How do you blend in, or how do you change to be like this group of folks and that group of folks? And the whole time I'm drinking, because I was always finding where my uncles or my dad or my aunt or somebody had their bottle hid everywhere I was going, and I could always get a nip anytime I wanted one. And even as an infant back then, the doctors told you if you got a kind of hyper kid, if they're breaking in them teeth and they're crying all night, well, you can just take a little beer and put it on a wash rag there, and you take a little, maybe a little moonshine, soak the tip of that wash rag and put it on their gum, and they'll quit. And, you know, hell, I've had alcohol in my system all my life. Grew up this way. So in high school, I was getting on up around 15 years old, and Dad was in construction, and he drove tractors. So every time I was kicked out of school, which was frequent, or out for the summer, I was on a construction job working. So I learned how to operate heavy equipment, drive dump trucks, and blow things up. I was the youngest blast man on a blast crew in the state of Georgia at the age of 15. Dad handed me 2 sticks of dynamite one day and 2 blasting caps and 50 foot of cord and a battery and said, go figure out how this works because you're going to be the blast man for this summer. And I'm going, oh boy. I think he was really trying to kill me, but you know, we're pretty smart. We figure things out quick. So he heard several explosions out there and kind of wondered how in the hell that I got, you know, like 8 explosions out of 2 sticks of dynamite. Well, I found out with duct tape, you could make your own fuses, and you could cut those sticks into pieces and wrap them with that duct tape, and found a new way to go fishing. Boom! Fish float to the top. Works every time, too. So I was learning how to blow things up a lot and having fun with that. It, all my life, I've had trouble with anger. And when I came into this program, I had to go back to what was the root cause of these angers, these resentments, these deep-seated feelings that I had that drove me to do things in life. One of the things that I remember when I was 6 years old was we were poor folks because Dad drank so much. He drank up all the money. And we would live in different places so that we could sell chickens and rabbits and doves and things to people. And at one particular Easter rolled around and we were selling rabbits, and I had this one rabbit that was mine. It was on a pin on the end, and I kept it nice and clean and well fed and everything. And some people were coming around, and several people wanted to buy it, but I wouldn't tell it. I wouldn't sell it, and I kept telling them, no, that one's mine. It's not for sale. And that afternoon, Dad heard me say that to somebody, that one was not for sale. So it was on a Sunday. And it was a custom on Sunday, you go out and get a chicken or a rabbit or something, you carry it over the chopping block and you cut its head off, gut it, clean it, cook it, and eat it. It was what we ate. So he went out there and he grabbed my rabbit and took it over the chopping block, cut the head off of it, and made me cut it, gut it, clean it, and take it in the house. Mama fried it up and he made me eat it. And that's where deep-seated resentment began. I had a resentment against authority figures. I learned that anything that I loved would die, and that you don't trust people, because that started shutting down emotions. If you showed emotions, Dad brought us up to be tough, the boys to be tough. And you would, if you lost a fight, when you got home, you got your ass beat for losing that fight. So I learned early on how to shut down emotions, and how to be tough, and how to you endure no matter what. Several other things along those lines. I had a dog one time. It got hit when I was crossing the road going to school one morning, and she followed me out of the yard and got hit, broke her 2 front legs. I had to carry her back home, put a bullet in her and kill her. I had to take her out back and bury her. So pets didn't do well with me. You know, I had to learn it, you know. You shut down those emotions, and all this, I didn't know how to deal with it, and there wasn't any counseling or anything, and so you just bury it, you stuff it, you bury it, and these things just keep building over time, over the years, everything just keeps building. And by the time I was 16 and a half, Dad and I got into our last argument, and it took my 2 brothers pulling me off of him, or I would have killed him. I almost beat him to death. And the next morning, he threw me out of the house and went and lived with one of my sisters for a while, and that created a world of crap because her husband was an alcoholic. So you got 2 alcoholics in the house, and it didn't work real well. Eventually, I wound up joining the military. I went into the Air Force, and at the time, it was the middle of the Vietnam draft era, and you either joined the military or left the country or just dodged it all the best you could. So rather than go directly to Vietnam, I joined the Air Force. And I signed up in the Air Force to go to be a mechanic, a jet plane mechanic. And they tell you, oh yeah, whatever you sign on that dream sheet, you'll get. Yeah, we'll make you a big lie there. Somebody in military intelligence, and I still believe those are 2 words you shouldn't use together because they just don't work, decided that they were going to form a new top security network within the Air Force, and they took 260 of us, which is called a flight, and they said, you're all going to be special security, top level security police. And I'm going, this is interesting. Now you take a street hippie from Atlanta who's an alcoholic and a drug addict, and you give them a gun and a badge and the keys to an entire base, you know, an authority with 1 stripe to shoot and kill 4-star generals if they do the wrong thing. I'm going, hell yeah, I like this. Yeah, and that's what they did. That's exactly what they did. And